Next speaker is Dr. Ronald Rosedale. Dr. Ronald Rosedale is an internationally renowned expert in nutritional and metabolic medicine and is a specialist in biology of aging. He has been a speaker in such prestigious groups such as the 8th International Congressional Conference on Molecular Medicine in Rio de Janeiro, the first European Conference on Longevity Medicine and Quality of Life in Brussels, Belgium, and many more. He is the author of the recent book, The Rosedale Diet, Insulin and Its Metabolic Effects. He is currently Chief Medical Officer at Advanced Metabolic Laboratories in collaboration with the University of Colorado and lives in Denver, Colorado. He will be speaking to us this morning on the detrimental effects of excess protein. Please let us welcome Dr. Ronald Rosedale.
Okay. Well, we might give a little bit of a different view on protein intake and nutrition and actually health in general. First of all, you hear a lot about Paleolithic nutrition. And the idea being that ancient man can tell us how to be healthy, that we need to go back to our ancient roots and eat like they did, and then we'll be healthy. But you have to go back even further and understand what nature is after. And there's two prime prerogatives of all life since the beginning of life. And that is what? More life. Exactly. And how do you make more life? Reproduce. And what do you have to do to reproduce? You have to eat. You have to eat and reproduce. That's what all life does. And we evolved with those dictums, right? Eat and reproduce. He does this to me on purpose. There is a... Well, so what nature wanted, and we can't use Paleolithic man because what we evolved with is a diet to not allow man to live a long, healthy life. Nature does not care at all about us living a long, healthy life, or any life for that matter. It wants life to live. It wants life in general. And just like you don't care if there's a little cell on your hand that dies, as long as the whole remains, neither does nature. Nature doesn't care. Nature doesn't care if you or I die or if all of humanity dies. It wants life to live. And so ancient man evolved with this dictum. And so the diet that ancient man grew up with really was a diet to maximize reproductive success and not necessarily the life of each individual. But what we do know is that there is a powerful connection between energy stores, reproduction, and longevity. In other words, certainly all you women out there know that it takes a lot of energy to make babies. And if there was not a lot of energy around, nature would put off reproduction. And it is that trick that we must use. It puts off reproduction by allowing the organism to live longer. It appears that all organisms have genetic mechanisms to delay aging, delay dying, so that it could then reproduce at a future, more opportune time. And generally, this is genetically controlled, and it's controlled by the availability of nutrients, whether it's good to reproduce now or you put off reproduction into the future. Because of this, we know now that there are nutrient sensors that tell the body and tell the genetics how much nutrition is available right now. And it is a liaison between nutrient stores and genetic expression towards reproduction or maintenance and repair. And we're talking here both on the cellular and organismic level. On the cellular level, increasing cellular reproduction might not be such a good thing, because we know that growth factors, when you push growth and reproduction too far, you stimulate cancer. We're going to talk a little bit about diabetes, because it's kind of the quintessential disease of nutrient stores. First of all, I mean, if you ask almost anybody, what is diabetes? And they'll say it's a disease of blood sugar. It is not a disease of blood sugar. You know, if you get nothing outside of today, realize that diabetes is not a disease of blood sugar. It is a disease of insulin signaling. What we have here is a failure to communicate. Okay, insulin doesn't communicate with cells. It doesn't tell the cells a very, very vital message. And that is not how much sugar to have. But we'll go on from there. The real purpose of insulin has to do with being a switch, a nutrient sensor, that is one of the pathways that will dictate whether a cell reproduces or whether it lives. Caloric restriction, metabolism, and IGF are and insulin are integrated into this longevity pathway, and it appears to be conserved throughout all of evolution. It's found in yeast and flies and worms and bacteria. I'm not so sure about bacteria, but everything down to yeast. Bacteria has a different definition of life. In fact, it never dies. It just keeps reproducing, so you can't really grow bacteria in there. But everything else, yeast, flies, worms, rodents, primates, and certainly humans, it appears. Since the discovery, most studies have focused on the role of insulin in metabolism of glucose. However, a failure of insulin signaling is certainly associated with a shorter lifespan. And what we're seeing over probably the last decade is a central role of insulin signaling in lifespan. That the discoveries indicate that aging is a programmed and well-controlled process regulated by the same pathways that affect growth, development, and metabolism. It is an evolutionarily conserved process, so you can extrapolate, it appears, to humans, since it appears ubiquitous. Calorie restriction also appears to ubiquitously extend lifespan in laboratory animals, and it so far appears to happen in humans too. It extends lifespan in yeast, worms, fish, flies, mice, rats, monkeys, and perhaps humans. Some of the common consistent effects of caloric restriction include lower fat mass, particularly visceral fat, remember that, lower circulating insulin and IGF concentrations, increased insulin sensitivity, lower body temperature. Flowers live longer if you keep them cooler. It appears kind of a universal truth. Lower fat-free mass, lower sedentary energy expenditure, decreased levels of thyroid hormone, which goes with the previous, and decreased oxidative stress. Reduced metabolism and therefore free radical production is another possible explanation. However, other effects such as lower body temperature, increased insulin, decreased IGF, decreased sympathetic nervous system activity, altered gene expression, have all been suggested as mechanisms of action of caloric restriction. There's also a connection between calorie restriction and chromatin structure. In other words, the genes are wrapped around chromatin, and their expression is often dictated by how well they're wrapped. Basically, you can uncover the genes to read them. You have to understand genetic expression is really the importance of genetics, not the genes you have. Every cell in your body, other than your sperm and eggs, have the same genes. What makes a heart cell, and a kidney cell, are which genes are allowed to be read. That is often dictated by chromatin structure and other molecular mechanisms, such as acetylation and methylation and things like that. And this is talking about an important part of genetic expression that is dictated by a gene called SIRT2, which the human homologous SIRT1. A lot of research is taking place at MIT and Harvard about this particular pathway that is NAD and NADH dependent, meaning energy stores. And when SIRT1 in humans and SIRT2 in so-called lower forms of animals goes up, animals live longer. It appears to turn off detrimental pathways that accelerate lifespan and turn on maintenance and repair pathways that can extend lifespan. And at least partially, you can upregulate SIRT expression and therefore lifespan by amino acid restriction. Okay. Interestingly also, that SIRT1 protein binds to and represses genes controlled by the fat regulator PPAR gamma. Now, where have you heard that before? Okay, that's Avandia, Actos. First one was Resulin. They had to take off the market because it killed too many people. Okay. But they still kept the others on. Okay. And these are supposedly insulin sensitizers. They are not insulin sensitizers. Okay. This is just marketing hype. Okay. The PPAR gamma agonists like Actos and Avandia work by increasing fat mass. They multiply fat cells. They give you a bigger dumping ground to put sugar. So yes, it lowers blood sugar, only because you turn it into fat. But is that a healthy thing to do? Okay, you have to ask the right questions. Is reducing kidney disease a healthy thing to do? If I could snap my finger right now and tell you that I developed a supplement that would reduce heart disease in half, is that a healthy thing to do? Well, not necessarily if it increases cancer. You really have to look at mortality rate. What is the end result? And if you really dig deep into the answers, you're always going to end up face to face with the biology of aging, because it will give you the answers. It will tell you whether something is healthy or not. If it slows the actual aging process, and that doesn't mean staying older longer, it means staying younger longer, it's probably a good thing to do. And then you're going to repress the symptoms associated with aging. You're going to repress heart disease and diabetes and obesity and osteoporosis and autoimmune diseases and cancer and arthritis and all the symptoms that we associate with aging. The only way you can really make a dent in that is if you treat the underlying disease, which we know now really is aging, and it is a disease. Because in laboratory animals, we can manipulate aging. You can manipulate aging by altering the genes involved in the pathway that actually regulates the aging process. And in so doing, you basically allow the organism to step back in time to a time when it no longer had diabetes. So it isn't just to prevent disease. You treat disease this way. I'm going to be just going to amazed if I ever get through this talk. Okay, insulin IGF represents a family of growth factors that regulate metabolism, growth, cell differentiation, and survival. It links insulin action to the MAP kinase pathway, which is a pathway of cell division. There's a very important gene. One of the first genes that was discovered that could extend lifespan in a laboratory animal in a worm was DAF2, discovered by Cynthia Kenyon at the University of California in San Francisco, and it amazed everybody. They didn't know at the time what it did, but they did know that DAF2 mutants could live four times longer. They found that a moderate decrease in insulin and IGF-1 signaling has been shown to extend lifespan in mice. It's associated with lower levels of insulin, and it is similar to the improved insulin sensitivity that you see in caloric restriction. They've shown that in mouse models, normal or increased food intake can extend lifespan. It's also suggested a special role for insulin signaling pathway in fat in the longevity process. Reduced fat also tends to lower insulin and protection from diabetes. In other words, they found by testing various tissues that if you just reduce insulin, if you reduce fat levels and you enhance insulin sensitivity and reduce fat levels in fat tissue, you extend lifespan. So it doesn't necessarily have to be all over. Fat tissue is a particularly important part of this process. Just a moderate decrease in insulin and IGF signaling has been shown to extend longevity in mice. This is done by a friend of mine, Andre Bartke, and he's done a lot of studies on mice and have shown if you downregulate insulin and IGF signaling, you can increase lifespan a great deal. And a couple years ago, he won the Methuselah Award. It's given to the researcher that can extend the lifespan of a mouse the longest. I think he's gotten them up to 6 years now. Their normal lifespan is 2 years. So we're not talking about a short. We're not talking about like a human equivalent of extending lifespan 10 years. What most people don't understand is what they're doing in these laboratories is amazing. They're tripling lifespan. And they're doing it by the same pathways that we possess, which is pretty interesting. But they're going into the genetics of it, which we can't quite do in humans yet. But the genetics are also altered via nutritional stores and nutrient sensors. So we do have a way to dig into these genes, maybe not with pliers yet, but by what we put in our mouth. This is interesting that it shows that centenarians have lower insulin and IGF levels. Okay, one of the nice ways to study aging in humans is on centenarians. And they've been showing now for quite a few years that there are differences among centenarians, but very few. You know, they actually eat different diets and smoke and have different personalities. There's not a whole lot of differences among centenarians. But one of the commonalities is that they have almost universally lower insulin and lower IGF levels. And I should also mention, I don't know if I have this slide, but they also have lower temperature and lower thyroid. Those two go together. Conclusions. Strong similarities exist between insulin and IGF signaling systems. May be linked to oxidative stress, metabolic regulation, food utilization, and lifespan. It suggests that the insulin-IGF system arose early in evolution and that it is an essential component of an anti-aging system which is conserved from yeast to humans. A slightly different view on how insulin works. The usual, the typical thinking is that the most important organs that will determine whether a person is insulin sensitive or not, whether they become diabetic, is how insulin sensitive the muscles, fat, and liver are. And what they did in mice is they turned on and off genes of the insulin receptor in different tissues of the body, and they found, lo and behold, that the two organs that are by far the most important in determining whether an organism becomes diabetic or not is whether it has insulin sensitivity in the brain and liver. Two big keys in determining health and diabetes. And they say they've overestimated how important insulin is in muscle and fat and underestimated in other tissues. And this is where we get to leptin. Now, how many people here have heard of leptin by now? Okay, a fair number of you. Unfortunately, there hasn't been as much publicity on leptin as there probably should because, as yet, there aren't any drugs to control it. But leptin is very, very critical to your health. And we're going to spend a good deal of time talking a little bit more about it and its connection to the diseases of aging and actually aging itself. It has a key role in regulating glucose. Again, we get to the brain-liver circuit. Regulates glucose. Brain will tell the liver how much sugar to make. About half of the sugar that you've got floating around in your body on a day-to-day period is determined by how much your liver manufactures. The other half is just how much you put in your mouth. And I hope all of you, and I certainly agree with Mike and Mary Dan and many other people about the importance of not putting a bunch of sugar in your mouth. I mean, if you want to keep your insulin and sugar low, it doesn't take an Einstein to figure, well, just don't eat it. Okay, and that means all the foods that turn into sugar. Okay, rice, potatoes, cereal, pasta, bread, all these things. It's just another name for sugar. You know, bread is a slice of sugar. Potato is a big lump of sugar. Within minutes after swallowing it, you just digest it into sugar. Okay, fastest way to upregulate insulin and IGF and sugar and accelerate aging and accelerate all the diseases associated with aging is by eating it. Okay, so we're not going to even go there. I'm just going to assume. I mean, the mountains of evidence to show that a high carbohydrate diet are bad is bad could fill this room. Okay, so we're going to fine-tune this. We're just going to assume we're on common ground here and assume that eating sugar is bad for you. One of the reasons, again, is because of the upregulation of insulin and IGF, which accelerates aging. And one of the ways that you upregulate glucose is that your brain takes signals and tells your liver to manufacture a bunch of sugar. That's why diabetics wake up in the morning and still have high blood sugar. I mean, I wish they didn't. They haven't eaten for 12 hours. Their sugar is still high, sometimes even higher. Again, that's their liver just pumping out glucose. The liver is under control. Major control of the liver is actually via the brain. What controls the brain? Hypothalamus. There is a crosstalk between the brain and the liver, which couples central nutrient sensing to peripheral nutrient production, i.e. glucose. Disruption may lead to hyperglycemia. That crosstalk between the brain and liver and that central nutrient sensing pathway they're talking about is leptin, your fat. Okay, leptin modulation and the impact of meal-related signals on food intake is related to increased activation of the brainstem nuclei, increased vagal outflow to the liver, produces more sugar. Your fat speaks to your brain via leptin, and it's supposed to tell it how much sugar to produce. We go back to the beginning. What you have here is a failure to communicate. That's how you get sick. We're 10 trillion cells. They have to communicate with one another. We think of ourselves as a single individual. We're not. We're more like a beehive or an ant colony. And there has to be constant and really harmonious signals that are hitting each and every cell all the time. When that communication goes awry, you get sick. That's the difference between life and death. If I died right now, I'd have the same parts, but they wouldn't be speaking to each other properly. Okay, leptin modulates glucose by acting as an insulin-sensitizing factor in most insulin-target tissues. We conclude that leptin can modulate in an inhibitory manner adipocyte insulin signaling by two different ways, as an autocrine signal and indirectly through neuroendocrine pathways. These mechanisms may be relevant in hyperleptinemia, such as aging. As we get older, and as indicated with accelerated aging in those people who are older chronologically, they have higher levels of leptin due to leptin resistance. Okay? Almost all fat people have high levels of leptin, and fat is associated with diseases associated with aging. Leptin is a pro-aging hormone. You want to keep it down, not up. Are people here familiar, because I'm just kind of skipping over and assuming that people understand what leptin usually does? And if I'll just give a very, very brief review. Leptin was discovered about 10 years ago, produced by fat. It's supposed to tell your hypothalamus how much fat you've got and whether you should keep eating and make more fat or whether you should get rid of some excess. In our evolutionary history, it was good to store some fat, you know, to outlive a famine. Food wasn't available 24/7 at that point. So all of our ancestors encountered a fast. You needed to have some energy storage, and fat's a really good, efficient energy storage system. But it wasn't a good idea to be too fat, because if you were too fat, you were going to end up being a meal for another entity. You know, if a lion was chasing a group of people, which one is it going to catch? You know, it's going to catch the fat one that couldn't make it up the tree. And those genes would have been eliminated from the gene pool. You know, so that means regulation. You wanted some fat, but not too much. That's leptin. And it's produced by fat itself. And it tells the brain how much fat there is and whether you should get more and whether you shouldn't. And getting more means being hungry. It knows that people are only going to do what they feel like doing. You know, if you're hungry, you're going to eat. It's as simple as that. If the only way you're going to get people to lose weight, meaning lose fat, is to not eat so much. And that means that they can't be hungry. Trying to not eat in the face of hunger is an impossibility long term. That's why you see this yo-yo dieting all the time. If people are hungry ultimately they're going to eat. It's like holding onto a cliff. You can look down 2 miles, know if you let go, you're going to die. Gravity is unrelenting. So is hunger. Okay. Therefore, there are signals to the brain that will tell you how hungry you are, and these are the things that will control also fat storage. And they don't just control hunger. The same signal, the same master signal that controls hunger also controls your ability to store and burn fat. It also controls how much sugar is available. They also control, as I mentioned, these nutrient-sensing pathways, the rate of aging, and therefore the diseases associated with aging. I can't stress how important that is, because no drugs to control it. You can control it genetically if we could dig into our genes, but you can control it by what you eat. Very, very important, because you dig right into the same genes that are regulating the aging process in all these laboratory animals. If you inject leptin right into the brain, into the hypothalamus, you increase glucose uptake. So all those people who are hyperleptinemic, they have high levels of leptin because the brain can't listen to leptin. What happens is, if your hypothalamus can't hear you, if you're getting too fat, and your fat is trying to yell at your brain saying you're a fat slob, quit eating, and the brain can't hear it, it's getting a whisper. And all it's hearing is, you're too skinny, you're not going to survive a famine, you got to eat more and make more fat, and that's what you'll do. There's a disconnect, a failure in communication. And so you make more fat, you make more leptin, until finally, even though the volume goes high enough that your hypothalamus can hear it, but in the meantime, you've increased your set point. In other words, you've got much more fat than you should have had your hypothalamus had good hearing. You got to restore that hearing. And it appears that certainly with insulin resistance, everybody's heard of that now, that's because your cells can't listen to insulin, right? So your pancreas produces more insulin so that your pancreas can yell at your cells because speaking normally wasn't getting the message through. So your pancreas has to yell. Okay, that's not a good thing because you raise insulin. What happens when you raise insulin? Well, you accelerate aging. Same thing apparently with leptin. Hypothalamus can't listen to leptin. You have to yell at it. So that high leptin is going to have a lot of detrimental effects. One of the things is increased glucose. Leptin prevents triglyceride accumulation, provided it can be heard. While fat influences insulin sensitivity, leptin also regulates glucose homeostasis independently of energy balance. It has a direct effect in promoting glycemic control. Its actions on the glucose homeostasis appear to be mediated via the central nervous system. It acts directly on insulin production by the pancreatic beta cell, apparently through the vagus nerve. Okay. Leptin goes up, you make more sugar. Here's a little chart that kind of demonstrates this. We don't have time to really go into it. Just remember, your fat apparently is in charge of your brain. We kind of think of our brain as being in control, and the old paradigm was that fat was just this old, this ugly energy storage tissue that everybody wanted to get rid of. But with the discovery about 10 years ago that fat is an endocrine organ, it produces hormones that regulate lots of really important processes in the body, we now know that your brain listens to fat. And when I say we're 10 trillion cells that kind of have to be integrated and has to listen to communication signals, it's kind of like the military. And you've got generals and you've got colonels and lieutenants and captains. And it appears, from what we know thus far, I would say that leptin is really the 4-star general. I put insulin now maybe as a 3-star general. And then you've got other hormones that they have to listen to. Because we know that all the reproductive hormones listen to leptin and insulin, and thyroid listens to leptin and the ovarian hormones and all these, they listen to instructions from above. But leptin appears to integrate everything, including aging. Your lifespan, I'll go back, will be determined by the communication of hormones, primarily insulin and leptin. We're talking about the hypothalamic arcuate nucleus. What time is it? that leptin signaling in the arcuate nucleus is sufficient for mediating leptin's effect on glucose. And it says the restoration of leptin signaling remarkably improved glucose homeostasis in the mouse. 8 weeks after treatment, blood glucose levels fell. Further suggests that deficits of leptin activity in certain regions of the central nervous system might underlie type 2 diabetes. Do we think of, again, diabetes being a disease of blood sugar? No. Insulin signaling? That's what I thought. But then it appears that leptin might actually supersede insulin in actually causing or treating diabetes. Here's a couple of studies that are interesting because it really raised eyebrows. After you're born, everybody thought your brain had fixed neuron connections. And they showed that leptin actually changes it. It changes the actual nerve connections in the brain to do its bidding. If it wants to make you hungry, it doesn't just do it via neurotransmitters, and it doesn't just do it by biochemistry. It actually changes the anatomy of the brain. Talking about it too, the fat brain axis enters a new dimension in the journal Science. Two stories suggest that leptin is a crucial regulator of both synaptic plasticity and axon guidance within the hypothalamus. Links between nutrition and neurodevelopment mediated by adipocyte-derived hormone leptin with very important clinical implications. Leptin controls not only how fat you are, but where you're fat. For a long time, we've heard about the apple shape versus the pear shape. And the apple shape is associated with much more detrimental physiologic processes. And the pear shape might look ugly, but you know, not particularly that unhealthy. That's subcutaneous fat. Okay, that's actually what they're talking about, is visceral versus subcutaneous fat. Visceral fat being much worse for you. We think of fat as fat, but actually we know now that it's two different organs. Visceral fat is a totally different organ, really, than subcutaneous fat. It produces different hormones, totally different results. Visceral fat is really bad for you, and what these studies are showing is that whether you have visceral fat or subcutaneous fat is controlled by leptin. When you've got visceral fat, it's because of leptin resistance. Okay, let's see. Let me back up here. This is showing that islets can get fat. Again, we think of ourselves as being a single individual, but again, we have to think that we're 10 trillion cells, and they have to be healthy too. And cells can get too fat. And just like being fat is not good for us, being fat is not good for cells either. And here it's showing that beta cells in the pancreas can get fat, and when they do, they can't produce insulin properly. So that's another way that leptin controls glucose and can determine whether you're diabetic or not. And whether these cells are getting fat or not is being proposed to be caused by leptin. We propose that the signal is leptin and that its function is to create for adipocytes a monopoly on fat storage so as to maintain the constancy of intracellular triglycerides in non-adipocytes. In other words, when things are working properly, you store fat in fat cells. When things are not working properly, when the signals are getting messed up, you start storing fat other places. And it's when you start storing fat in other places that you get unhealthy. Bears get really fat prior to hibernating. But it's also known that bears don't get heart disease, because their fat is almost all stored in subcutaneous tissues and not in visceral tissues. So you can get fat. Being fat doesn't make you sick. Being fat in the viscera makes you sick. Being fat in places other than the subcutaneous tissue makes you sick, determined by leptin. Again, it's showing that as the fat content of the islet increases. And the other tissue that is very importantly regulated by leptin is the liver. Again, apparently via the vagal nerve from the hypothalamus. But it also determines how fat the liver is. And there's a few studies here that talking about non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Grossly underdiagnosed. It affects probably, you know, at least two-thirds of obese people, perhaps more. And probably some people that aren't obese. In fact, it almost totally parallels the incidence of the so-called metabolic syndrome. And in fact, many people believe that the metabolic syndrome is actually caused by fatty liver, which is determined by leptin. And here it's showing both non-alcoholic fatty liver disease strongly associated with other components of the metabolic syndrome, including diabetes, elevated cholesterol, triglyceride, hypertension. The process starts when there's so much dietary fat in the blood that it can no longer be contained in the usual storage places, such as fat cells. Again, associated with the metabolic syndrome. Leptin treatment decreased visceral fat specifically, supporting the role of leptin in determining fat distribution. So that's a very important role of leptin, not just in determining whether you're fat, but where you're fat. Perhaps more important. Interesting translation here. This was done on a Mac translation in the PC. That was a surprise. insulin action, again, we're talking about cardiovascular disease now, and insulin action showing that there's a big link between insulin action and cardiovascular disease. And insulin resistance and development of diabetes can be significantly reduced in aging rats by preventing the age-dependent accumulation of visceral fat. And what they're doing now with this knowledge is they know that when you do liposuction, you don't really affect health very much. They know that they showed that you didn't really help diabetics. You didn't really help health by taking out subcutaneous fat, which is what liposuction does. But when they took out the omentum of mice, they could totally reverse diabetes, which was interesting. So they're starting to do this in humans at Vanderbilt. That's what this is showing. Here it shows that leptin, other effects of leptin, increases aromatase activity. That's in visceral fat only, not in subcutaneous fat. Okay, so leptin signaling in the visceral fat increases aromatase, which converts testosterone into estrogen, so you see all these fat men with breasts. That's because of an increase in aromatase, and that's not good because it also is a very powerful risk factor for cancer, especially prostate cancer. Role of leptin in autoimmune diseases. Some of it has to do with the hypoandrogenicity, but it also has to do with the fact that leptin is a very powerful pro-inflammatory agent. You've heard of the link between chronic disease and inflammation and cardiovascular disease. And leptin is actually itself an inflammatory cytokine, but it also dictates the production of interleukins and TNF-alpha, which also are very pro-inflammatory agents that are linked to heart disease and diabetes. And here we show that that leptin is a novel independent risk factor for coronary heart disease. Leptin enhances the calcification of vascular cells. This was new to people. That leptin, and there's other articles, I don't know if I put those in here, leptin also helps control osteoporosis. It helps control where you put calcium. We think of osteoporosis, and certainly women are being given the dictum to take a bunch of calcium for osteoporosis, that osteoporosis is caused by lack of calcium. That is ridiculous. Okay. That's like saying, I'm going to put a bunch of bricks on an empty lot and stand back and watch a house be built. You know, I could take a cup of calcium carbonate or coral calcium or calcium, any type of calcium you want, calcium phosphate, and I could dissolve it in a bucket of your blood and I could stand back for the better part of eternity and I would never see a bone form. It won't happen. You have to have the signals to make bone. And there's a very powerful connection, very powerful correlation between osteoporosis and arterial calcification. It means you've got the calcium, but you're putting it in the wrong place. And just like you put fat in the wrong place, a lot of this apparently is controlled by leptin. The leptin kind of dictates where you put calcium. Now, how can it do all these different things? Once again, it has to do with its ability to control the rate of aging. And aging is going to be determined by proper communication. And when that communication goes awry, all sorts of things go wrong. We hypothesize leptin may regulate the calcification of vascular cells. Taken together, these results suggest that leptin regulates the osteoblastic differentiation and calcification of vascular cells, and that the arterial wall may be an important peripheral tissue target of leptin action. Okay, they have shown, and again, I don't know if I have it in here. Yeah, over here. Leptin inhibits bone formation through a hypothalamic gonadal. Leptin controls osteoblastic activity in bones. All the treatment right now for osteoporosis has to do with osteoclastic activity. Go back to basic science. Osteoclasts break down bone. They want you to break down bone so you can make new bone. I should mention that bone strength is determined by the protein content and not the calcium content. It's the flexibility of bone, which has nothing to do, by the way, with bone density. It gets much more complicated than that. But it's the protein content. You want to have protein. You need protein. But you want it in the right places. And you want to have the right amount. Leptin is a potent inhibitor of bone formation. So when you have high leptin, you inhibit bone formation. Hyperleptinemia, fat people. Life is not in the parts. We're all made of the same stuff. It is what you, or more accurately, your hormones do with the parts that will determine whether you're healthy or not. That's really the way to think. Talking about obesity is bad for you. Talking about the hypothalamic set point can be reversed. Possible role of protein. You know, leptin controls sweetness. I'm just recognizing that this is my next talk. It doesn't matter. The problem was, they're both so linked. You got off easy. I really blast protein in the next one. I just talked about leptin regulating pro-inflammatory responses. Okay, so this is a talk, I want you to understand, this is a talk that is talking about hormones and aging. Okay? Okay. The next talk, okay, is going to talk about problems with protein and aging. Okay. When we go a little bit deeper, I'll just mention quickly through a pathway called the mTOR pathway. How many people have heard of mTOR? Anybody? A couple people. Not too many. But it's an extremely important pathway. Another nutrient sensing pathway. Like you have insulin and you have leptin as a nutrient sensing pathway. You have another pathway called mTOR that senses the amount of amino acids available and also regulates aging similar to insulin, but using amino acids as the key to energy stores. I mean, the two major sources of nutrition that will dictate whether a cell is able or should reproduce or should live longer to reproduce at a future opportune time, you have to have fuel available and you have to have parts available. The fuel early on was glucose and not fat. Because when these signals arose, apparently in evolution, was very long ago. It's a very ancient mechanism when there wasn't oxygen in the atmosphere. I mean, life had to flourish prior to there being oxygen in the atmosphere. You know, plants had to flourish on Earth before they put out oxygen. So these nutrient signaling pathways arose using glucose as the signal for fuel availability and amino acids as the signal for the parts availability. And those are the two things you need to make new cells. Okay. So the next talk, we're going to talk about the mTOR pathway that dictates amino acid availability and how it plays in to all of this aging process. Maybe this is good that we give you kind of a background here. Okay, reduced leptin concentrations are permissive for the display of torpor. We early on we talked about caloric restriction, and one of the things it causes is a reduced temperature. Okay. You live longer. Temperature kills. You heat something up, and it just disrupts molecules. It denatures proteins. If you're going to live longer, one of the ways is by toning down the temperature. In dietary restriction, there may be diverse mechanisms, often known as calorie restriction. Okay, how many people have heard of caloric restriction as a way to enhance lifespan? Good. And it's the dictum has been that it's strictly a reduction of calories. It doesn't matter where the calories came from. If you reduce calories, you're going to live longer. What they're showing in more recent studies is that is not true. There are specific nutrients that you can restrict that mediate the effects of dietary restriction. And in this particular study by Linda Partridge in London, who's done a lot of work with aging, reduction of either dietary yeast or sugar can reduce mortality and extend lifespan, but by an amount that is unrelated to the calorie content of the food, and with yeast having a much greater effect per calorie than does sugar. Okay? Get that. Yeast having a much greater effect per calorie than does sugar. Yeast was their form of protein that they were feeding these animals. Okay? So when you reduce protein, you live longer. Here they're showing that a fall in leptin is one of the things that mediates the effects of dietary restriction. If leptin doesn't fall, you're not going to live longer. In normal men, the fall in leptin with fasting may be both a necessary and sufficient physiologic adaptation of these axes, which has to do with hypothalamus, pituitary, gonads, IGF, thyroid. You have to drop leptin, or dietary restriction is not going to help. Okay, it's been dietary restriction explained from an evolutionary viewpoint of the adaptive response of the neuroendocrine and metabolic response systems to maximize survival during periods of food shortage. Adipose tissue has been recognized as an endocrine organ, and leptin, as secreted by the adipocyte, seems to be an especially important factor for the adaptive response to fasting and neuroendocrine alterations under caloric restriction. Okay. The one known way to extend lifespan in almost every species studied since 1933 has been to reduce calories. Since that time, the emphasis has been to figure out why. 10 years ago, they discovered a gene that can control aging, called the AGE1 gene, discovered by Tom Johnson at the University of Colorado. They expanded upon it, DAP2, I mentioned, Cynthia Kenyon, and they found out these all link into a genetic pathway that regulates maintenance and repair, or reproduction, growth. And you can dig into these genes now, and then you can really affect lifespan, which is what they're doing. But they're all linked to nutrient sensors. And it appears that in mammals, leptin plays a key role. In those animals that use fat as a primary energy source, leptin plays a key role in the aging process. Prior to leptin, and apparently they're cousins, it was insulin and IGF. When I say insulin and IGF, I want you to understand that in ancient organisms, insulin and insulin-like growth factor were one and the same. One molecule did both. Okay, as we evolved, we kind of had a separation of duties, whereas insulin was more metabolic and IGF was more anabolic. Leptin has been proposed as a potential candidate for the adaptive response to caloric restriction. This was a longer talk than the other one. So we'll have to hurry. A hypothesis for interpreting extension of life by dietary restriction posits that normal food intake is geared towards optimizing the internal milieu for reproduction. That's what nature is after. Okay, not after health. Nature doesn't care if you're healthy or not. We have to use this trick, however. Nature wants us to live long if it thinks that we will reproduce better in the future. Again, in our ancient life, that was dictated by fuel availability. So we can use this knowledge, we can use this science to regulate the nutrient sensing pathways to improve our lifespan and our health. Here it's showing that leptin is very much involved in reproduction. We knew that athletic women, skinny women, women marathon runners, stopped ovulating. Inject them with leptin, they'll start ovulating again. Leptin is permissive for reproduction. Okay. So again, reproduction and eating are the two main endeavors of all life, and they're both controlled by leptin. They're talking about DAF-16. I won't get into it, don't have the time. Here it's showing that, DAF-16 is one of the genetic components that mediates caloric restriction. And again, they're finding that just activity in the intestines, and in C. elegans, the intestine is where it stores fat. So DAF-16 in fat is what will determine lifespan in the worm. Okay. Signals from fat regulate genetic expression. I've got 10 minutes. Okay, give me 5 minutes. Yeah. That's what I wanted, too. Here again, talking about the importance of fat tissue in longevity. Leptin controls whether you're satiated or not, but also has to do with life extension, has to do with PPAR alpha as opposed to gamma. Again, PPAR alpha is kind of an opposite control of PPAR gamma. PPAR gamma is what people are taking drugs for. PPAR gamma accelerates life, or accelerates life and reduces lifespan. PPAR alpha enhances lifespan, exactly the opposite. Leptin modulates this through the PPAR gamma system because PPAR gamma and PPAR alpha determines a lot of what happens in fat. And failure of leptin to regulate food intake, body fat, and its distribution and insulin action suggests that leptin resistance plays a major role in dietary restriction. And there's a link between leptin concentrations and telomere shortening. Telomeres are the, I don't have time to go into it, but another theory of aging has to do with the length of telomeres controlled by leptin. Let's see, waist to hip ratio, talking about visceral versus subcutaneous fat. Centenarians have lower waist to hip ratios. Long lifespan was predicted by low levels of leptin. Oh, here we go back to here. And here they're showing that a bunch of amino acids stimulated leptin production. One of the ways that leptin is elevated that causes hyperleptinemia is by high levels of amino acids. Whereas a high fat diet is associated with low leptin. Talking about a membrane composition, don't have time to go into that right now, but how insulin and leptin indicate the types of fat that are found in membranes. Talking about IGF again and membrane. Here it talks that fatty acids, that omega-3 fatty acids improve leptin sensitivity. And we're almost done. This is a study that hasn't been published yet, that a collaboration between myself and Eric Westman and John Conhalis at the University of Colorado. And what we're showing is that a high-fat, adequate protein, low-carbohydrate diet with nutritional supplements reduced correlates of aging in an outpatient setting. There were reductions in body weight, insulin, glucose, leptin, triglycerides, and free T3, the same things you see with caloric restriction, but we were not restricting calories. The reduction in insulin and leptin levels were strongly associated or correlated with the reduction in weight, and the percent reduction in leptin was far greater than the percent weight. In other words, leptin is not necessarily dictated by how fat you are. It's dictated by what you eat. Sugar increases leptin. Amino acids increase leptin. Okay. If you don't, the difference between you don't have to have any sugar, but you have to have some protein. But you don't want too much. Too much raises leptin and accelerates aging. Okay, that's really the key. And we'll talk about that more on my next talk. Okay, your brain is a servant of your fat. Oops. Your brain is what your fat uses to do its bidding, and your fat's bidding will determine your health and lifespan. Okay.
We're going to do now from 9:45 to 10:15 your protein.